Hi, thank you everybody for coming. Above all, quite short notice, because we didn't get the announcement out about this until the last few weeks. This is an initiative that the two departments, media and sociology, thought up together, and partly, I mean, for two reasons really. I mean, Nick can correct me if I get this wrong, but this is how I see it anyway. First, just to get the two departments talking to each other more, so it's a nice platform for communication between us and exchange of ideas. But also because we both felt that there isn't really a theory space at the moment at the LSE, a space where we can get together and talk about our theoretical questions, theoretical interests. And there clearly is a demand for this in both departments, but also elsewhere in the school. So we thought it would be nice to set something up and have a certain, you know, not too many seminars, perhaps three or four a term, partly with LSE-based people, but also with some visitors. So that's the plan, and this is the kickoff seminar. There would be more, a lot more people from the sociology department here, but quite a few are otherwise engaged and send their apologies. So but we have some members here. So there is a lot of interest, I think, on both sides. Introduce you to Nick Caudry and Andreas Heck. You probably know them anyway, but I'll do the formalities. And they're going to talk about, I think, your new book project.
Yeah.
Which is of interest to all of us, partly for me, of course, because of going through the arguments about the social construction of reality, which is nice. And I think you've talked about Elias as well, is that right?
Oh, yes.
So all very well done. First, Andreas Hepp is a visiting fellow at the LSE. Has been for the past year, is that right? Is it or longer?
Yeah. Well, for short stays.
For short stays.
Four longer stays at LSE.
Okay. And he's from the University of Bremen, and he's a professor of communication and media studies with a focus on media, culture, and communication theory. So welcome to him. And then Nick Caudry, who I'm sure everybody knows, he's the head of department of media since. And he's the author of many, many books, including, I have a nice list here, Nick, so I like to embarrass people with what they've done over the years. So he's written books called The Place of Media Power, Pilgrims and Witnesses of the Media Age. That was your first book,
yes.
I think. Followed by Culture, Reimagining Method of Cultural Studies. And there was Media Rituals. There was Contested Media Power, which is an edited book. Listening Beyond Echoes, which is a rather beautiful title. And then more recently, Why Voice Matters. So, without further ado, Nick and Andreas,
yes, thank you. And if I just pick up on the general point about this grouping, it's not meant as an exclusive marriage. So, yes, we do want to bring media and comms and sociology together more regularly, but it's also open to our friends from other departments.
Yes.
So we're lovely to have Yanis and Christina here from management, and maybe we'll draw in anthropologists. Who knows? It's an open space for those who care about getting the theory right.
Okay, good. Thanks a lot for being here, well, at LSE, but also especially here in the opening of that seminar together with Nick. So, as it was already said, what we want to present here are some ideas or arguments we develop in a book Nick and I are writing together, which has the working title, The Mediated Construction of Reality. 50 years after the original publication of Berger and Luckmann's book, The Social Construction of Reality, we want to rethink the original topic. How is social reality constructed? There is a fundamental need for such a task, as Berger and Luckmann did not anticipate the fundamental role of media in these processes of construction. Something which was maybe less obvious when they wrote the book, but something which is nowadays obvious and striking. Because of this, our point is that such a task cannot be just a reinterpretation of Berger and Luckmann. we must go one step further, and therefore other thinkers of social theory become prominent. We should especially refer here to Alfred Schütz and Norbert Elias. This is the reason why our presentation has the subtitle Remembering Schütz and Elias, referring to them. In addition to Bourdieu and others, it becomes possible to build the necessary foundation for media sociology that is able to analyze critically our present mediatized social world. This is our argument. To substantiate this argument, we want to argue by answering four questions. First question: why should we reconsider the social construction of reality at all? By posing this question, we want to reflect why it is worth to come back to the original book by Berger and Luckmann. There are some good reasons for this, especially for media sociology 50 years after the original publication of the book. Second, why do we have to rethink this fundamental approach? This question refers to some problems we nevertheless have with Berger and Luckmann. These problems become obvious when we confront their ideas with the original ideas of Schütz and of Elias. This is the reason why it is necessary to remember both. Third, why do we need figuration as an intermediary concept? However, while Schütz helps us to understand some fundamental problems Berger and Luckmann have, we need an intermediary concept for media sociology of the present. This is where figuration and remembering Norbert Elias comes in. And fourth, we want to present the overall argumentation we develop in the book. So, why should we reconsider the social construction of reality at all? This is a question we should take serious to avoid any unreflected trajectory of the past. Berger and Luckmann's book, Social Construction of Reality, was written half a century ago, and even the paperbacks we use of this book are, well, a bit outdated, as it seems to be. It seems to be that they less refer to a present kind of analysis. So why is it worth to go back to Berger and Luckmann at all? We want to answer this question twofold. That is, first from the perspective of sociology, as well as from the perspective of media and communication studies. And we need this double perspective if we want to give an answer that is truly media sociological. The reason is that media sociology, as we understand it, is neither poor sociology nor poor media and communication studies, but in the relation between both. In the perspective of sociology, there is a need to reconsider the social construction of reality, because by this we can bring back media and communications back to social theory. There is a great necessity for this. While the role of media and communications increased within everyday life, it became theoretically far more silent about them in social theory. Originally, communication and media were fundamental for classical sociology. We can refer here back to Max Weber and his attempt to build up a sociology of the press. Ernest Mannheim introduced already in the 1930s the term of mediatization. In its beginnings, the Chicago School had a deep interest in communications and the city. Symbolic interactionism even took media serious, if you have the work of Shibutani in mind. And with scholars like Irvin Goffman, there was a high phase of reflecting communication and radio talk in the 70s. Later, it became much more silent about topics like these within social theory. This is the reason why Jefferson Pooley and L.U. Katz, the latter an important crosser between classical sociology and media communications, argued American sociology abandoned communication. For sure, they have a certain point of view, mainly thinking about public opinion research and political communication studies, which lost, at least in the US, its original sociological basis because, that is the argument, sociology lost its interest in this area. But Pooley and Katz are not the only ones who share this position. With a totally different background, in his case, social phenomenology, Hubert Knobloch writes in an article about communicative constructivism and mediatization that, quote, in Anglo-Saxon social sciences, sociology seems to have lost its former focus on communication and related topics. At this point, we are a bit less pessimistic and closer to an argument by Silvio Weisbord. He has recently written in the introduction of his volume Media Sociology that, quote, no single coherent media sociology exists, but rather sociologists engage differently with communication and media studies. Therefore, it deeply depends on the considered area of research if sociology really abandoned communication or not. There are areas in which this is far less the case. The sociology of the network society, Castells and others, for example, hardly abandoned media and communications. However, there remains a fundamental point that in most recent approaches of social theory, media and communication are not reflected as a necessary foundation. But we need this, as both are fundamental to understand the present social world. At this point, our argument is we cannot overcome this gap. We can overcome this gap by reconsidering the social construction of reality in the light of media and communications. Interestingly, the problem of media and communication research is just the other way around. Here, we need a social theory approach to link the various middle-ranged analyses to a wider social approach. To substantiate this argument, we just want to refer to two recent publications. Sonia Livingston, in her address as ICDA president, argued that, quote, in a heavily mediated world, all spheres and their intersections have become mediated. One consequence of this is that the area of media and communication research changes. It is not anymore the area It is not anymore the more or less separated sphere of mass communication, but increasingly each social phenomenon is somehow related to media and communications. By this, the border of media and communication studies become blurred, and also the question arises what media and communication studies can contribute to the research of these various other social spheres. At this point, our argument is, if we want to contribute as scholars of media and communication to this far-reaching discourse of social sciences, we must link our theoretical approaches much deeper to an overall discourse of social theory. This becomes especially evident if we move our focus to mediatization research, an emerging area within media and communication studies. Here, the explicit aim is to contribute to a more general theory of transformation. This is the reason why scholars in this area, as Knut Lundby put it recently, understand their work as of interest for humanities and social sciences trying to grasp the transformations of our social and cultural environment. Again, we can only do this if we theoretically link our research to more general approaches of social change. As a consequence, also in the perspective of media and communication studies, it is worth to reconsider the social construction of reality. In the best case, such a reconsidering offers the possibility to link media and communication research profoundly with social theory. And we can build up by this a media sociology of the present. And this is, in that line of argument, our fundamental consideration: the social construction of reality has something to offer for media sociology. There are three points we want to highlight here. First, the fundamental idea of social constructivism offers a link to approaches of communicative constructivism and mediatization. Within media and communication research, constructivism is a certain common sense category. It only makes sense to analyze media when we at least implicitly argue that communication matters because we also construct our social reality through communications. This is the reason why communication is so powerful and why we have to investigate critically, for example, the different ways how the myth of the mediated sender is articulated within society. Such an implicit constructivism became so widespread that it's rarely reflected and even less linked to social theory. Here, the social construction of reality offers a profound basis for a media sociological constructivism. Second, the social construction of reality is still of worth because it presents a very specific form of constructivism. If we have the book The Social Construction of What by Ian Hacken in mind, He was very critical against any constructivism for which all is just a matter of more or less situative doing. However, and for Wright, he excluded Berger and Luckmann from this criticism as their social constructivism emphasized the human-made character of the social world, but at the same time positions itself against a postmodernist arbitrariness and an ignoring of the material. Rather, we find a different line of argument in the writings of Berger and Luckmann. They are interested in how social constructions become stable and durable because they also objectify. The reason why they insist on construction is rather a different and also emancipatory one. By this, they emphasize that social facts are not naturally given, but made by us, and as a consequence, can be criticized by us. This fundamental position is the reason why they are so skeptical against concepts which disguise human agency. For example, if one speaks about the logic of an institution and forgets by this that not an institution as such has a logic, but that there are patterns of typification at work based on which this institution acts. Third, the social construction of reality has a dialectical approach that is interested in the interplay between the objective and subjective, considering materiality, objectivation, as well as sociality, institutionalization. Such a dialectical approach is especially of importance for media and communications, as mediation always has been an interface between the individual and society, as well as between the materiality of the media and their institutionalized forms of communication. We can refer at this point, for example, to Roger Silverstone and his original argument of the double articulation of the media, that is, the necessity to analyze media as content and technology. Similar ideas can be found in the work of Raymond Williams and his argument on television as technology and cultural form. But this brings us to our second question. So why do we have to rethink the fundamental approach Berger and Luckmann have? The reason is that there are some deep problems with their arguments, and this is where Schütz or remembering Schütz comes in. Let us first refer back to Berger and Luckmann to make our main problem obvious. In a nutshell, the main problem is twofold and has far-reaching consequences which partly have to do with the abandoning of communication in at least parts of sociology. While Berger and Luckmann do not abandon communication in total, they reduce it in a very problematic way. Communication is reflected by them mainly as language, which is considered beyond the media. We can substantiate this by referring to chapter 3 in the first section of the book, where they discuss language and knowledge in everyday life. In so doing, they develop arguments like these, quote, "The common objectivations of everyday life are maintained primarily by linguistic signification. Everyday life is, above all, life with and by means of the language I share with my fellow men. Language has its origins in the face-to-face situation, but can be readily detached from it." This quote is striking for two reasons. First, it demonstrates that for Berger and Luckmann, language is objectivation and not the whole communication process. Second, while they in general argue that language can be detached from the face-to-face communication, face-to-face situation, their analysis remains focused on especially this kind of communication, talking with someone face-to-face. But is this the social world we are living in? And can we base a media sociology on that? Well, one might argue that within the 60s, Berger and Luckmann could not anticipate this problem. But this is exactly the point where it's worth to remember Schütz. Already in the 30s, Schütz was much more sophisticated on this than Berger and Luckmann. For Schütz, the interesting point was how the mediatedness of the social world changes with media. And his perspective on this was rather the perspective of a continuous extension of communicative practice. It is worth to reread his original how he originally discussed the transition from direct to indirect social experience as a continuous social relationship. Again, a quote. As another example, imagine a face-to-face conversation followed by a telephone call, followed by an exchange of letters, and finally messages exchanged through a third party. Here, too, we have a gradual progression from the world of immediately experienced social reality, what he called Umwelt, to a world of contemporaries, what he called Mitwelt. The differences to Berg and Luckmann are striking. As early as in the 30s, Schütz develops an understanding how the relation between Umwelt and Mitwelt changes when media become part of the social world. The interrelation between both is not anymore just a question of naming face-to-face conversation or not, but a question of continuous transition of social relationships. This was also the reason, for example, for Ernest Mannheim to introduce the concept of mediatization already in the 30s. So he looked for a term, for a new term, to reflect these changing social relationships. Our argument at this point is we must remember Schütz to rethink the social construction of reality, because already in the 30s, Schütz was much more sensitive to some of the media-related changes that Berg and Luckmann ignored in the 60s. This sensitivity has much to do with his ability to think more in gradual differences of experience than in schematic distinctions to which Berg and Luckmann sometimes have a tendency, at least when it comes to language. So, why do we have to rethink the fundamental approach? Continue. Remembering Schütz at this point means that we have to begin to realize what the theoretical foundation of the social construction of reality is that we can build on, but also where we have to extend this. When it comes to the theoretical foundation of the social construction of reality, we can refer to three points. First, the social world is intersubjective. Describing the social world requires an analysis that considers the various subjective perspectives of the different actors within the social world, but that at the same time takes into account that the social world has an existence beyond, that is, independent of the individual. The social world existed before we as individuals were born, and it will last as individuals when we as individuals are gone. Various media are important towards securing the intersubjective character of our social world. Media offer not only a possibility to communicate across space of time, developing a shared understanding of the social world, but also to represent the social world. Media here include not only so-called mass media, which in the form of broadcasting and print for a long time represented the predominant definitions of the social world. Media here also include the various digital platforms we use to communicate with our friends and colleagues and to represent these social relations. The intersubjectivity of our present social world is something we articulate through our many media. Second, everyday life is the foundation of the social world. According to Schütz, everyday reality is constitutive for living in the social world. What does this mean? As Albert Schütz and Thomas Luckmann formulated it, the everyday life is the province of reality in which man continuously participates in ways which are at once inevitable and patterned. It is the region of reality in which we can engage as individual human beings and which we can change through our bodily operations. Berg and Luckmann went further, describing this everyday reality as deserving the title of the paramount reality, which grounds the possibility of the social world. Because we have bodies, and it is only through the capacities of our bodies that we act in the world, there is no other possible grounding of our social world than our embodied actions. By everyday life, we mean quite simple, that each of us does in the social, does in the world, individually in the relation to the others. But what we do in the world is somehow, but what we do in the world is not somehow separate or cut off from the technological means by which we act in this world. Today, it would be bizarre to ignore the reality of everyday life as separated from the media, when supermarket checkouts read our credit cards with our personal data, when our everyday communication happens in a high degree via mobile device platforms, and so on. Under these circumstances, it makes no sense at all to think of everyday reality as pure experience that could be put against a somehow second mediated experience. Third, the social world is internally differentiated in domains. The social world is not one homogeneous thing. It is internally diverse, exhibiting a multi-platform structure. The structure and force of the social world is quite consistent with much of the everyday life being de facto lived within sub-universes of human existence. A variety of small worlds, for example, single-purpose communities of work and leisure groups, as Benita Luckmann called it, the wife of Thomas Luckmann, which, well, is more or less forgotten on her writings about this. This perhaps sounds a bit like symbolic interactionism's social world perspective, but the risk with that latter approach was to neglect the common links and constraints forces that sustain these sub-worlds and how they are structurally related. Remembering at this point Schütz also extends and also extending his arguments, we can say that the social world is differentiated in social domains. Each of these domains is defined by a shared practical orientation of the human acting within this domain. This said, we cannot understand these domains as closed systems, as traditional system theory does. The boundaries of each domain are rather blurred, and they in various ways intersect with each other. In relation to these domains, media play a key role in a double sense. First, they stimulate the differentiation of these domains by offering a high variety of symbolic resources. Second, they support the intersection of these domains by supporting communication across them. With these three points as fundament, this is our argument, we can build up a media sociology of the present mediatized social world. But already these three points bring into mind where we have to go further and far beyond Berger and Luckmann. We only want to highlight again our three arguments we made implicitly before. First, we have to consider communication as practice instead of language. Second, we have to consider the role of media instead of ignoring it. And third, we have to consider the increasing mediatization and its waves of mechanization, electrification, and digitalization instead of being ahistorically. Or, put differently, the challenge is to move from the social construction of reality to the mediated construction of social reality, and this is the aim of the book we are writing at present. At this point, Nick will continue.
Thanks, Andreas. So we're going to move on to our second featured writer today, Norbert Elias. And taking as read all the issues that Andrews has emphasised, how to rethink what a media sociology is genuinely grounded in social theory and therefore in a sense oriented to the very same analytic and theoretical objects as sociology itself, not aimed at different objects. That's the fundamental move we want to make. Why do we also need to draw on Norbert Elias? And let me here say thanks to Andreas, because I have to be honest, Norbert Elias, to me, until Andreas pointed out my ignorance, was the civilizing process. And I knew he'd written stuff about sport, which I'm not interested in. Little did I know some of the more fundamental work he did later in his life, which is what we're going to be putting the emphasis on here, and that entirely changed my view why Elias was so important here. and particularly the concept of figuration. Because this concept, which I'll go into in a bit more detail in a moment, we see as a key bridging concept to link from the problems of Berger and Luckmann, improve via Schutz, but to the complexities of the present, which are anticipated and could have been anticipated by neither of them. Because in thinking about media sociology today, in the 21st century, we have to grasp that mediatization is not just a matter of having a lot of TV images around and a lot of newspapers. It's a matter of how the construction of reality through the things we call media is changing itself. It's changing its modalities. They're expanding and deepening. Media are becoming embedded in ever deeper ways into everyday life. And that's why we need a term for this, mediatization. But that's only a term. We need to understand how this actually unfolds in daily practice. And just before, I was talking to Janet about the law, one could say education, the police force. This is happening in every domain of activity. We won't talk about specifics, but hopefully what we say will be relevant to those specifics. How is this happening in detail? Well, we see figuration, loosely sketched though it is in Elias, as a bridging concept here, because it bridges at a most fundamental level the situation that individuals and groups are in when they are in the world with the communicative practices of which they are part as they are in the world. It is a sort of term that somehow sees both in view at the same time. And this was a fundamental attempt of Elias to overcome the structure, agency, individual, social gap, which he saw as really making social theories progress impossible in the early 20th century. And he originally had the insights, of course, in the 1930s, but the term figuration only was given full clarification in the 60s, 50s, 60s, and 70s, and even early 80s. But we can't just stop there. We also have to think about how the notion of figuration has to be seen itself in ever more complex and varied forms today, driven by media pressures, but by other pressures as well. And I'll try and cover all that in the next 15 minutes, 20 minutes. So if we start with figuration, this was, as I said, a concept from his late work. A striking fact of social theory's history is that, for my money anyway, Elias was already way ahead of, well, he was slightly prefiguring Deleuze. He was certainly prefiguring by 20 years Latour's insights into the necessarily networked nature of the social. He was already arguing in 1970 that the social sciences needed to change their means of speaking and thinking. He was doing it in quite direct language with no great philosophical drum rolls. He was just saying it very straightforwardly. We need to find a different language. And he argued that it was essential for us to grasp the special kind of order associated with processes of social interweaving. And to do that, we have to start, and this could be Latour, but it was written a few years before Latour started what really getting going, we need to start from the connections, the relationships, and work out from there to the elements involved in them. So our sense of the history of sociology would be a bit different if everyone had read this text before they read Laboratory Life. But this was written a few years before. And I think that's very significant in itself. And the key word, and we need a word to do the concept, we've got to have some word, whatever his limitations, the word he uses is figuration. To me, as he unpacks it, the changing pattern created by the players as a whole, a flexible lattice work of tensions. So there's already a sort of analogy for the physical sciences, just as in Latour, already in Elias, in 1978. The players as a whole, he mentions, well, his sort of examples of figurations are almost sort of alarmingly simple-minded. He thinks of, he describes at one point the players in a card game. Someone puts one card and another card and so on, and over a complex series of iterations, a whole set of higher order understandings are developed, each of which involves each of the others. They can't be understood without understanding the relationships. There's nowhere else to start except the relationships evolve through this set of interlinked actions. But of course, we need to make this very simple idea work for much more complex cases. Now, this is a very distinctive concept, I think. And as I'll say, different from the approaches to networked sociality that we've since become accustomed to. And I think it's better. That's what I want to argue. First of all, he stresses that the behavior of many separate people in any type of interaction intermeshes to form interwoven structures. Actually, I don't know what the German word is there, intermeshes. Maybe you'd have to check it. Anyway, when I read that, that seemed to me quite an interesting word. It's not like assemblage, which really emphasizes just the linkage itself. There's something more in that word meshing, intermeshes. The way I read it is it implies a number of really fundamental things. First of all, a feedback loop that goes backwards around and again gathering more intensity as it does so. And the feedback loop is not just of links, the material links. Why do they have to be a feedback loop? You're either linked or you're not. No, there has to be a feedback loop because it's a loop of interlocking actions, each of which reflects on an answer to the previous one, and they can interlock only because they are actions involving meaning, involving interpretation. That's where the mutuality comes from. It's not a bolting on of this to that, which is the activistic theory of the assemblage, which is very important for certain purposes, but it falls short of this notion of interactions and intermeshing of meaning. And interestingly, when I discovered this passage, and I said to Andrews last summer, I found this interesting bit of Elias, and I think this is what it means. And he said, well, the German is Wechselverhältnis, and I don't speak German. And that already carries this implication of the intermeshing of meaning. It is not just a bolting on. And that was striking, because it's so obvious this is what Elias had in mind, and it's obvious this is what Latour does not tend to have in mind. And this, at one time, seemed rather exciting in sociology. We didn't need to think about meaning anymore. We could look at the bolting on. And that is tremendously liberating for certain purposes. But there's a lot that's lost, and it was never lost in Elias, because the key point is the bolting on is still going on, but it takes account of the role of meaning in creating those things, in sustaining. So I think it's a bit of a paradox that already in 1970, Elias had moved far beyond the older notions of social structure coming from structural functionalism to insist that we have to understand the social as network phenomena. But doing so in a way that offers a richer meaning-based understanding of what networks are and why they matter than Castells did two or three decades later. I won't say much about Castells and Aymar aspects of his book Communication Power, but I think the problem is that with that book that he bifurcates between the notion of network, which is just a physical material bolting on, and the question of meaning, which he acknowledges is really important. He wants to bring it back in, but he can't do that with the notion of network society. But Elias can. So this is also a way of thinking about complexity. Elias had an intuition from the late 60s that sociology needed to deal with complexity in late modern societies, and he had a concept to do it without any fancy drawing from complexity theory, what topology. He didn't need any of that. He just had a very simple means to prize that open with this concept of the figuration. And the key point that he grasps, but some of those more fashionable moves do not, is that society works, becomes complex, because it is a communicative order. It's an order partly built of, only partly, of course, through communications, through relationships of meaning, through regularities, if you like, materially based regularities, of course, of communication and meaning. So let's try and apply this for the last 10 minutes of our talk to digital society, if I use that cliche. There are lots of examples of figuration. It's a very much an open concept, and you might think, well, this could mean almost anything. Well, it can mean almost anything. But I think it points, if you like, to the open set of spaces for interaction and dependency that we are now involved in acting in the social world, which is a mediated social world. It is an open set. We won't try and give you a simple list of what is there. The figuration is a concept which enables us to think about the material infrastructure of today's communication system, as my colleague Robin Mansell puts it, and to think about it in concrete ways. And to think also about the contradictions that result from those interdependencies, the damage they may do. We'll come on to that in a moment. But I want to link straight ahead to apply the concept of figuration to a critic of our relations to the communication system, who's the great legal theorist from Washington, Georgetown's Law School in Washington, Julie Cohen, who did a talk for us in March this year. She doesn't use the word figuration, I think she could, but she's interested in somehow addressing within social and legal theory the consequences for all of us as subjects of our what she calls our distinctively Western democratic type of surveillance society. This was a quote from her lecture in March, in which surveillance is conceptualized first and foremost as a matter of efficiency and convenience. That's her diagnosis of the mess we are in our relations to information systems. I think it's provocative, but it is possible to think about this as a very large-scale figurations in which we are entangled when we want to book a plane ticket, when we want to get into the library, or we want to still have money coming out of the cash machine tomorrow. In other words, a sort of open-ended series of obligations and constraints, just as the simple figuration of the card game was, or the figuration of the chain of relations in a market square, or market selling corn across a countryside, but with two differences for us now, that these, we're in relation to entities that maybe we didn't know existed. We didn't have any sense existed until we come up against problems with them. Our password is refused. We have to renegotiate. We then suddenly come hard against the wall, which is an institution, which was always there, always underwriting our possibilities of action, but of which we had no knowledge. And yet we have always been in that relationship to it. And also entities over whose goals and operations we can't imagine any form of control. That's very different from the other human beings that the figuration saw us in relation to. The card players we can see face to face, or the market traders who are selling wheat just like we are, but in some other town in the country. So this type of situation is rather different from what Elias imagined, but I think he at least gives us a starting point to think about it, rooted in social theory. However, there are some limitations to his concept of figuration, which I just want to run through here. I think that we can solve them in Elias's work, but they are there in the initial formulation. His initial formulation is basically a sort of hydraulic model, that when we're in a card game or we're buying and selling wheat on the market, someone pulls this way, the other pulls the other way, and out of this emerges a relationship, a stabilization, which can be naturalized and reified. But all there is to be said is about that chain of mutual action, pushing and pulling. Therefore, it doesn't tell us so much about the depth of the entities that are doing the pushing and pulling, their internal complexity. It doesn't need to. It's the key point, is the point to the pushing and pulling. But there's a lot more that needs to be said if we understand complex types of figuration, or to understand the intensity, the force of these bonds, these figurations. In particular, Elias says nothing about what we might call the higher order obligations that result when, as a result of being involved in many different figurations, as I said, figurations of figurations, we become dependent on something we could call an infrastructure, a banking system, a communication system that supports our phones or whatever as we move across the planet. That supports, in other words, the very possibility of interaction, doing the most basic things humans do, interact, which still remains the necessity of the social world. So the original concept is very helpful in understanding the individual as social, as he puts it, the need to stand alone goes hand with the need to belong, that obvious point. But it still explains everything else that follows from that in terms of what the individuals are doing in figuration and coordinating with each other. Going back to that quote I gave you before, by figuration we mean the changing pattern created by the players as a whole. A sort of equilibrium, a balance of time. That does not go far enough. However, if we turn elsewhere in his work, we can find hints that he already had a more complicated sense of what a figuration was. Amazingly, for once I was pleased to find a bit of Elias that Andreas hadn't read or had forgotten. He actually even anticipated the consequences of medium communications technologies for this. In something written in the early 1980s, published in 1987 in German, he pointed out that media and communications technologies were themselves changing the complexity of the social by changing the nature of these figurations, resulting in what he called fluctuations in what might be called social pressure, the internal pressure in the society. Didn't say a lot more about it, but he said something was happening. And a key point, there are many things we could say about this, but something I want to focus this through is that I think this means we now have to think about figurations not just as person-to-person obligations, but if you like, impersonal or system-based obligations. Actually, though, Elias was already onto this. He already had a very acute sense of this working through what is all much more familiar to us, which is his work on time, his work on the tempo of societies. I won't read out that very long quote because it may be already familiar to you from the civilizing process. But the key idea there is that the tempo of a society, and he wrote this in 1934, long before we had the word figuration, with so much emphasis in his work, the tempo is the result of these intertwining chains of interdependence which run through every action, creating competitive pressures, forcing us to align what we do to what others do, and which, in the sense of an overall speeding up or tempo, coalesce or crystallize all these different forces acting in alignment. As he puts it towards the end of the quote, the tempo is a function situated at a junction of so many chains of action and demands therefore an exact allocation of time. Makes people accustomed to subordinating momentary inclinations, I want to buy an ice cream now, to the overriding necessities, no, I must be at the meeting in 5 minutes' time. I don't have time to buy the ice cream. It trains them to eliminate all irregularities from behavior and to achieve permanent self-control. And as we know, Elias was an enormous inspiration for Foucault. So he grasped at the highest order how in large societies, simple coordinations, when replicated on every scale and with every scale reinforcing every other scale, have a normalizing character. It's a profound insight, and of course it's reflected in a lot of recent work about time by Judy Weichmann in this sociology and Hartmut Rosa in Germany. I think with this supplemental form of figuration drawing on his other work, we can start to address these costs of everyday belonging today. Let me give you one of my favourite examples from Sherry Turkle, the social psychologist, her book Alone Together. A little quote which comes from she just interviewed a 16-year-old boy at school, interviewed him for half an hour about his use of his devices. Good interview. He politely switched off his phone before she started. It went on for half an hour, then he switched it on and was leaving. And as he switched his phone on, he realized he had 100 text messages of some sort or other. And no longer speaking to her, turning away from her half, as she describes it, he said, how long do I have to go on doing this? And she shares his pain and says, it's striking that a 16-year-old sees the rest of life as an impossible obligation held in his hand. This is a striking and really pathetic, in the true sense, thing. And it leads to her sense that we need to reevaluate our lives with media. And of course, it's an important crisis because it's driven by economic pressures. No one intends this exactly, but there's enormous economic pressures under enormous economic pressures to generate value. And there are a few ways of generating value now, a few new horizons. That is set by creating new online platforms where people can interact, do transactions, generate data, which itself can be sold, and so on. This is the fundamental horizon of the new economy. And this involves a shift, as Josie van Dyck in Amsterdam puts it, from network community, which could still be understood in the old figuration way. We know who we're networking with. It creates a Gemeinschaft, not just a Gesellschaft, to platform sociality, where we interact with many who we cannot know, on terms which we cannot know, with costs which we probably can't know. This is a very different type of sociality. Linked fundamentally to another writer, as another writer puts it, Ulysses Mechias, to the capitalist drive to appropriate the spaces and times of sociality. So that connectivity shifts its value from just being a social value to being a monetary value. I could say a lot more about that, obviously, but clearly there are political consequences to this. This transformation that Elias helps us grasp and give theoretical form to. And just let me give you a few quotes which bring out the sort of pain, if you like, in the social theorists these days in trying to express the violence of this. Hartmut Rosa, in a striking sentence, says, social systems are becoming totalitarian in their demands for access to actors. It's a very carefully written book on social acceleration. I'm sure that word was very carefully chosen. Totalitarian. Or Judy Cohen, going back to her, the legal theorists. Again, legal theorists are not casual in their use of language. The configuration of a network space is increasingly opaque to its users and operates via a system of governance that is authoritarian. Authoritarian because we have no choice to negotiate about whether our password should be accepted or not. It either is or it isn't. And then underlying that is a deeper insight which, by Rosa, I found had already been expressed by Klaus Opfer already in the 80s, that the more options we make available to ourselves, which of course we want to do, the less optional is the institutional framework with whose help we make them available. There's a price of being free, in other words, which leads to an interesting paradox, which is a paradox in that at the core of market liberalism today, that the figurations of connectivity, which apparently allow us to express and enact our freedom ever more effectively with more and more, bring necessarily unfreedom. Our forms themselves are unfree. And all of this based in corporate political economy pressures, of course, summed up in that quote from two Canadian writers, Longoir and Elmer, the corporate social media have attempted, at least, maybe succeeded in redefining communication, not just by offering users some flexible tools of self-expression, that's the thing we celebrate, but by harnessing communications in an effort to monetize them. And I think it's worth, and really social theory has to take this on board, to grasp that we are living in a world where there is, however disguised, a corporate ambition literally to appropriate the social. Literally to own its very possibility, to control their parameters, to make money from changing those parameters. This is a corporate ambition so large that it has no precedent in history. We have no precedent for grasping a corporate ambition this large to own everything that could connect us. But this is reality, and this is being planned for very particular places on the planet. So we need social theory to help us understand this transvaluation of everyday sociality, which, keeping with the Elias theme, also involves rethinking time. Again, some more Dutch writers have talked about social media time as a time where the interrelation between processing and the key term of phenomenology, experience, is increasingly not free but subject to platform political objectives. All of which I think leads not to what's been offered so far as the solution for sociology, which is digital sociology. Just learn to code, know how to deal with Twitter, just get with the program and just do it. to a fundamental return to the resources of social theory to enable to grasp better these profound transformations going on around us, rooted both in political economy, because we cannot make sense of any of this unless we understand the political economy drivers, and with the vision and the insights, the eyes, if you like, and the ears of phenomenology. So that's what we're trying to do in the book. You can see, I hope, why Schütz and Elias are not just accidental friends that we bring in to give us a bit of support, but fundamental tools to confront the latest problems. And then we've just got here what our book looks like. We only sketched this last week, so it's not yet printed. We've written some of this, but we're open to lots of other media instruction. We haven't got a cover. Well, we have a patch. We have got a cover, yeah. We start from the heavy, how we live in media, space, time, data. And then in part three, we try to deal with the applied problems, the problem of the self, the problem of the collectivity, and the problem of how there could be order in anything like this complex. And what happens if there is order, but it's not an order that we like? And ending with the conclusion, which I want to call, I don't know whether Elias will agree, I want to call it an uncivilizing process.
Thank you very much. You mentioned Judy, by the way, just but while I'm on it. She couldn't, she's in Spain today, but she'll be giving the next, with me, we'll be giving the next paper in series on speed and
fantastic.
Classical social thoughts, and I'm sure I'll have some remarks for over that time. I've got lots of questions. Can I jump in first, though, while I'm doing the room and take chairman's privilege? I've got no brief for Latour. I was rather intrigued because you said had we not read Latour, but we read what was the other text instead?
What is sociology?
Yeah, so we read Elias instead. Then sociology would have been different. And then you proceeded though to say, okay, so what's missing from Elias or Elias? Mm. And you kind of suggested it was materiality. So I felt you were taking us back towards Latour. So I'd like, and this is simply my impressions of what you're saying. So I'd quite like you to clarify exactly what your distance is from Latour and AMT, because it seems to me that some of this would suit that kind of theory.
Oh, okay.
And so why are you not using that?
Well, we're not using Latour. I'm a great admirer of Latour, and in fact, I think he's until recently been very neglected in media studies. So I've written essays saying he needs to be brought in. Right. But there are certain limitations to Latour, and the limitation to one is a lack of an account of representation, content, different semantic content, and the other is less emphasis on meaning relations.
Right.
Now, of course, what he brings out is there are a lot of important relations which have meaning effects, which are not meaning relations. I totally agree with that. So the point I was making mischievously was simply about sequencing, but actually, at least if we read Latour, we need to know that Elias said something rather similar early on, and that's important. But what I was adding to Elias, I don't think entirely comes from Latour, because it was arguing that that Elias and not Latour was right in seeing these relations of independence as fundamentally having one element in meaning relations, but that it was an incomplete account. So it did not give us enough account of the actors and their depth at either end of that. And then, how could it? It didn't anticipate these massively more complex figurations we're now in, which build up into whole systems,
which
are no longer personalised or could be, and have meaning relations, because as we know, when our password is refused, that is a loss of meaning. That is a meaning relationship, is a profound denial of the possibility to speak, write, act, whatever. It's a meaning relation generated by a system actor, which of course has human actors behind it doing the programming and so on. So I think we would still hold to the Elias line of argument, and acknowledge, of course, that Latour made enormous steps in getting us to grasp how things are bolted together to make new possibilities with social possible. That has to be another part of this. But I think it's not the part that gets us to the sense of crisis that we have, which is related to meaning. Fundamentally, that's why I don't. That's why I would hold to that line, to deny the importance of Latour in other aspects.
We had Hartmut here last week.
You did.
We advertised it. We had a workshop on the sociology of speed, and Hartmut spent 2 days defending his acceleration paradigm.
Did you know? I know it, but
I know his people.
I didn't mean it. We have to improve our communication. I had no idea.
Yeah, it was a fascinating workshop, and you gave a very strong defence, because there are lots of people kind of arguing against this idea of totalitarian acceleration of society. So that people lined up, you know, including Richard Sennett, Saskia Sassen was there.
Oh, right.
American scholars as well, Harvey Wallach, Steve Jackson. But Hartmut was very solid in defending this paradigm. So
he's linked to Honneth and...
he's working on resonance now, the idea of resonance, which is taken from Honneth, so it's interesting.
But the interesting thing, that basic movie, although he doesn't draw on the light so much, does he?
No.
A bit, but... The way he sees things at a system level is because of this stacking up of various things. That's the force. I mean, it's not a Luhmannian notion of the system as somehow natural, which is we both hate and do everything to avoid. It's a system in a very particular set. That's a high achievement of systematicity.
Yeah.
At certain very special conditions. Oh, I wish I could.
It was fun. Interesting. His work now, he's moved on, but this resonance idea is very, very interesting.
Resonance.
I'll tell you about that another time. Open up, sorry, I don't want to monopolize. Yes.
First of all, sorry to be late. My digital agenda mixed up Belgium and UK time.
Oh.
Very stupid. Anyway, if I'm a little bit off topic with the question, please let me know. But you mentioned Latour, and what I find very interesting, because I work a lot on that lately, especially from an STS perspective, so science and technology studies perspective. I think one of the main issues with Latour is also, I think, is that he doesn't use the ratio of power. So he leaves out any reference to power in that sense. And that's why I like the work of Andrew Feinberg.
Yeah.
Because what he does, as being a critical STS person, he combines notions which Habermas uses together with Latour. And he talks about how he calls it media, in fact. Media for, on the one hand, money and power, and Feinberg brings in technology as a media which defines some way how people interact with each other, how society is constructed. So it's kind of congealed social relations, but often on critical perspectives. He uses often this picture during the Industrial Revolution, these cotton mills were built at height of children, and where the whole issue was, why should we change these mills? Was a big discussion in Parliament when we can't change these mills and we can't change these machines. Because it's bad for competition, but so we have to keep children's labor because otherwise. And all the discussion was about how does the technology be built to be, in a sense, adhering values which we now think are very important. We shouldn't have child labor. So I think there Latour, and combined with some issues of Habermas, is very interesting still. Mm-hmm. The second comment is you mentioned in your book apparently how we live in media. Is this a reference to the work of Deusen? And so, because he talks about building on Bauman, from people more and more live in media, so kind of disappearing, it links a little thing to media practice, media as practice and so on. So how is my question is this related to this work or not? Anyway. And finally, I think also your remark at the end was very interesting, where you talk indeed about how in the social media platforms, I worked a couple of months, some time with José and Thomas on their new book, which is about these issues, José van Dijk and Thomas Poel, University of Amsterdam.
Yeah.
And they talk about what you refer to, these social media platforms and how they, this connectivity, from sociality to connectivity. And I think we have also a panel on this in the Amsterdam Privacy Conference in October about this, is about how corporations not only try to occupy this public space, but also try to redefine public values in that space. and to what extent they are successful in doing that or not doing that. And that is about the term part, of course, the sharing economy and issues happening there and in relation to data. I think Melanie knows more about these issues than I do. So I think this is a very interesting link also to that kind of work. Just some comments.
Great, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
I start with the first question and then Nick will continue. So, which comes back to the point Elias and Latour. I think the main difference between Elias and Latour when it comes to power was that the theory of figurations in Elias is a theory of power. So for him, he was interested in the question how, well, each figuration has a certain kind of balance of power. And the balance of power, he didn't mean that somebody or everybody would be equal. His point was that it is in the relation, or the power relation in between, we have to reflect. So that somebody has power all the time means that somebody is subordinated. And we have to take this in account. Partly, he also had an interest in the materiality there.
Yeah.
So, of course, it was not technology like we have in mind, but in a certain sense, he already had the thinking that you find in Latour that technology is society made durable.
Yeah.
This was already there when it comes in a more general frame within the thinking of Elias. And in our perspective, Elias is still one ahead compared to Latour. At one fundamental point, he had not a crazy idea to think about a society with something flat.
Yeah.
For him, it was something which is structured, and is structured by power relation, and he pushed the concept of figurations exactly forward in the latest years of his work, because he thought this is an analytical tool, how we can understand how power relations work without being so obvious, like they had been in former times. And this is one of the main reasons really why we think that figuration is a much better concept than assemblage, for example. This is, well, in a certain sense, not critical at all. And why should you take a concept which is not critical at all and extend it by a Habermas whatever to make it critical? Better it is to think about a concept which you thought as a critical instrument at that point.
So we're certainly not anti-Latour. I mean, it was very important for my work, but we're anti-Latour's anti-sociologism.
Yeah.
We want to get back to the idea of the agenda of sociology he wants to sweep away. On Marc Dozer, no, we're not following him. I know Marc Dozer very well. We've had a few debates. I disagree with him completely because I think his idea is that our life has become a media life. It literally is transmuted into a life which is literally is media. And this, for me, undercuts the whole grounds of criticizing it. If he were right, Sherry Turkle couldn't have written a book or must have imagined it. People couldn't talk that way. I just think he's fundamentally wrong there. But, you know, it's an interesting debate that we have. On the corporations trying to redefine values, yes, exactly. I mean, Josef van Dyck's book, which I quoted from, The Cultural Connectivity, is very inspiring. Just been writing an article together, and I see our work very much as fitting together with the work she's doing with Thomas Pearl. And indeed, there are a number of scholars at the moment who are really trying to reach down to a level of. She's not a social theorist, she's a brilliant, the most brilliant exponent of cultural studies today in the world, I think. Basically, interpreting the social world. Refraining from social theory, but which the move she's making fit very well. We're trying to do, I hope.
And she brings in political economy and Latour in her book in that sense.
Yes, so Latour is not there, but we're emphasizing something else. He's so dominant that one has to give more emphasis to it.
No, I'm all for it.
It would be a great thing, Nick, if Latour isn't there. It's been everywhere. For God's sake, 13 years.
What we're really suffering from in sociology is Bourdieu, actually.
Oh,
I'm very pleased we haven't talked. It's me that brings him in.
So I can't drop it.
I'll unsay what I've just said.
But just as a food.
I see great value in any sociology book that does mention Latour.
Okay, thanks. Can we We'll get you an endorsement. Thank you.
You can have a chapter called Not Latour.
But just as a footnote, chapter 3 is on about first why network is not enough, second why assemblage is not enough, and third why figuration is a much better concept. That's because great. It is rooted in a classical social theory thinking. So if it's okay to...
And afterward by Latour.
Can I put a substantial question on the issue? First, thank you. Very nice and massive talk. Many very interesting social problems. I think the concept of figuration has a lot of potential, but I think also you've sensed it yourself. That's why you argue that it's better than other competitive concepts. I wonder how you would extend it and how would you use it to unravel the complex work of mediation that modern digital media enable today. How would that, I think here you face a challenge to use that concept as, can I use the word platform, as a platform to understand these complex machinations and mediations that are happening due to the involvement of, you know, digital media, social media and all that. Yeah. How would you going to do this? I know it's a very big and general question, but...
No, well, thank you. No, we do. We've got to do that. And I remember you had, I hadn't forgotten you had the question. Well, we have to do this work over the summer, let's be honest with you. But the way I begin to answer this, and I haven't seen anyone else who's been attempting this, is one really simple answer, is that many figurations, which appear to be straightforward interactions, are on the basis of certain parameters of space, which is itself created through those processes, and that constrains the figuration. So that's a simple answer, but it's not enough, clearly. A second answer would be through the notion of platform. The article of Tarleton Gillespie 5 years ago arguing that the platform is a sort of type of space that's emerged where there is no longer a barrier between the commercial and the social. They seem to be in seamless interface. That, of course, is an illusion created by the rhetorics and the infrastructures and the design of the platform. But that is a... That platforms are spaces for interaction, direct into the corporate body, if you like, and vice versa, which create figurations which have been built up through software, through design, through all the things one would have to describe. So I think one would have to come a layered account of figuration. So one have to go beyond the... basically figurations plus with the system being the plug, which is what we offered there, to having, well, actually the many layers of figurations, and we can operate on different layers, and the most powerful in their consequences are those which are most deeply layered and make the most of the figuration.
Just to extend on that, I think it is important to have in mind that figuration is a structural term. And if you link it to processes like mediation, it is really helpful to think about the structural interrelations in which these processes of mediation take place. And exactly there is the theoretical link which has to be worked out. So in a certain sense, Elias himself, he thought it, and there we could take also the criticism we have with Berg and Luckmann. He very often thought about this in face-to-face interactions or playing a game together and what things like that. And the challenge we have is, and what we are working on at present, is really to rethink this in our present digitalized media environment, where a lot of these figurations cannot be thought anymore as these face-to-face think in presence. And this is really while Elias had a feeling about what media do change. This was still a feeling which was driven by the early computer coming up in the 70s. So this, and as an old man, he already had a feeling this will change how we think about the social. But he never had a chance to work this out in his approach of figuration. And this is one of the tasks we are at present working on. Chapter 4, not my goose. A criticism.
And chapter 7.
And chapter 7. Yeah.
That in. But exactly. We have, you're right. We have to do it. A laying of infrastructure. You're right, this is what we're going to do more of. Yeah. You did have a question, and we missed it.
Yeah, it seems that at the core of the concept of curation, for me, is how rules are negotiated. So a lot of the examples that you used were about playing certain games, like this card game, but also kind of figuring out our obligations and the constraints within a certain system. So in that sense, how much do we allow these, for instance, commercial and social mix that is kind of seamless now and encouraged through certain work interfaces and digital interfaces, how much do we allow it to take certain shapes as opposed to others? And how these figurations, as you say, don't take place in face-to-face kind of negotiations, but it's more like when we don't read the I agree and all the terms and conditions and things like that. So in a sense, I think perhaps there is a bit of behavioral science for me that could potentially speak to this. But not sure how you see that playing a role. And sometimes the problem with that is that it's not necessarily that much conscious or meaning kind of meaning making feedback, but it's just these different behavioral.
I thought maybe Nick will continue. So the point thinking about or thinking in figurations, or why Elias came to this point was to avoid a separation in the thinking of the individual on the one hand and the social on the other hand, or the system, or the atomic person. So his core argument why he built all this up is. That we must build a social theory in between. This means what the individual is only through the social relations, but what social relations are is only through the individual. And so his idea was really to build a term, or to develop a term which is able to think this, and this was for him at least the term of figuration. So I would say a figuration is not about rules and the individual, but it is about thinking about the individual and rules in a specific way, which means rules are not made by an individual or by individuals. Rules emerge in figurations and have to be thought all the time in relation to these figurations. And this was also a kind of criticism Elias had in the 70s, on the one hand against system theory. He says, they do as if systems exist as such, but also against an individualistic approach in social theory, which argued that the individual behavior builds up social phenomena. So he really took, in a certain sense, Aristotle serious to say that a human being is a social being from the beginning, and tried to develop an approach based on that. This is not at least... it's not 100% an answer, but more in the sense, if you follow this way, you might ask the question in a different way.
Yeah.
Remind me a little bit of what Giddy's just called structuration.
Yeah.
Is that accurate?
I'm not so much in Giddens, but
I would... are you interpreting rules?
That's an element, but we're both influenced by William Sewell's critique of that. Sewell's approach to structure is that they're also resources, and they're not reproduced in the same way as the rules are.
Right,
so he takes Giddens apart.
This is exactly the point of making it durable through resources, through materiality.
Whereas Giddens said they were just unintended concepts.
And I think that's actually a fundamental point. It goes back to your point anyway, that Sewell says at one point that at the end of Logics of History, that the social is both infrastructure, it's both built infrastructure and its semantic content. It's both at the same time, but you can look at it differently from different places. It can't be one or the other. And Giddens puts more of the emphasis on the semantic content, and that's not enough. And that's why it's interesting that the notion of figuration has quite a lot of emphasis in the physical metaphors.
Yeah.
You've seen that from the quotes. In that sense, it's common with Latour in emphasizing the building, literally the building of the social, but only through these relations of meaning. He somehow fuses the two in his language, and I think that's the rights of the movement. It wasn't quite there either in Gibbons or Latour. Now, you had the question earlier,
yeah,
didn't
you? It sort of goes back to the question of how figuration can connect up with the process of mediation. But Andreas, you mentioned, you know, sort of the turn in communication or the emphasis when Sonia Livingstone gave that speech about how now media has gone into all of the social. So for me, I'm wondering, because I know both of you have written to a certain extent about like the meta capital of media and how it sort of may or may not function as, you know, supplanting other forms of power. So how can we think through, I mean, and maybe you're doing this summer too, and we could talk again this summer. Because once you do that, then I could do some other stuff. how does that connect with, like, investigating? Because clearly there's lots of different impetus in play. If you're thinking about media in relation to the police force,
yeah,
or in relation to teenagers, or, you know, academics, or whatever.
Right. Well, I mean, there's a bit I had to cut out. Basically, our talk is a fusion of different talks. So the longer talk that mine was a version of had another section on value and social worth. Because I think another area where there's not quite enough in the figuration concept is how are generated the values that get us into a figuration in the first place. Of course, to some degree, they emerge through the figuration, but not entirely. Family, of course, we are in the relationship and we have to make it work and so on. So there are certain questions around value and worth, and that's where media are important, and the meta-capital concept we mentioned that developed drawing on Bourdieu's theory of the state argues that the media have such a general valence over social territory that they are able to underwrite certain forms of symbolic capital in a very general way. So to create a celebrity which can work across space and can be used as a local capital in particular fields, I think that's still true. And I think it still explains perhaps some of the force behind the particular corporate strategies as to why we must be online, why we must follow the present. Although the relationships are so complex that I think it would be very hard to point to any causal relationship because they're all interlinking in a massive feedback loop. So I'd hesitate to call it exactly meta-capital anymore, but there is a relation if we go to the question of value. So what you're really saying, I think it's interesting, is that this question of economic value, which is being transformed, can't be separated from symbolic value.
Right.
So a broader topic will be about value and the changing nature of value.
Absolutely right.
And we've also got time and again, Elias, at least helps us get at how value emerges in changed ways through something we might call system, but basically lattices of interdependence. So it's an interesting area we need to do.
Also, a new wave of monetization.
Yes, yes.
Think, you know,
well,
it's sort of
a great.
There
was a great piece I read by Morozov on the weekend about Fitcoin.
Yeah.
Fitcoin.
And that was a devastating
parody. Really
look
at 21 now, this new Bitcoin project where Bitcoin's being mined by every object around us like a toaster. It's pretty
This is the currency of our servitude, is the way he puts it. It's a very powerful argument. This is the money we'll be paying for genuine slaves.
Yeah, I have a question. I found the talk really convincing, especially the solution that you found with Elias, but I found there was a certain break between the first part and the second part, and that's not related to the fact that we had two speakers. You started off with phenomenological theories, both Schütz and Berger-Luckmann are very much anchored in that tradition, and for them, obviously, individual experience is the anchor of theorizing, and the social is thought of in terms of intersubjectivity, that means from the viewpoint of individual experience. And then you're identified as the core problem of these theorists, that they think in these terms, which was for me kind of a certain contradiction, because you could have started with a very different theoretical approach. I understood you hate Luhmann, but he takes the opposite viewpoint. Mm-hmm. He starts with media, he starts with communication rather than the individual, his or her experience and intersubjectivity. Mm-hmm. For him, communication is the much more foundational concept, and media is much more foundational. And that was a certain mm-hmm. contradiction. Why do you start with that? I found the solution that you presented very convincing, because you actually overcame both the problem of Berger-Luckmann as well as the problem of Luhmann. Luhmann's problem, I guess, is that he thinks of media and communication in terms of the conditions of possibility of the social. That means the elements, the foundational elements that build the social world, media like money, dissemination media like the press, while with Elias you think about these things in terms of already figured elements of the social. So you don't have these conditions of possibility and then the concrete manifestations. You only have concrete manifestations of the social, and the media themselves are, if you like, as platforms, as the social media that we now confront, are already to some extent a form. But that would also mean you abandon more or less the idea of media in traditional philosophy, namely as opposed to form, because you use from the very start this idea of figuration, which is obviously related to the concept of form rather than media. And I just wanted to hear what your opinion is on that one. So you don't have anymore the media out of which you build concrete social forms, and in Simmel, you still had that contradiction. I mean, for Simmel, still there existed concrete social forms and the media out of which these forms were made, or the materials. But I understood your approach as re-abandoning that kind of dichotomy. So,
I start, Nick will continue. So, we made a move from the criticism or from rethinking social phenomenology then to an analysis. But I think it doesn't matter if you take Social Construction of Reality or Schütz's original book on the social world. They also made a move. So in the Social Construction of Reality, only part one is that subjective perspective in the sense of phenomenology. Then they try to move on to build a theory of social reality. And Schütz did the same with his book. So he started with his criticism of Weber, and then made the move on how we should think the social world as such. Where you are right is that also for Schütz, he started his argument with the individual. So in our perspective, that's not really a break, because however you make this move, you end by the question how the social world, termed now by Schütz, or how social reality in total, let's call it like that, is structured. And in a perspective, I would say, really the problem with Berger and Luckmann was, in my view, that they thought that they might build up a theory which is not situated in time. That they might, they really thought, they had a deep feeling, they could build up a theory which works across the time. And if you reread it now with the absence of media and the thinking there might be a pure non-mediatized situation of life based on which we can build up the social theory, you realize how crazy it is. So also, if we take the imagination that a child nowadays would grow up only with face-to-face communication, already the typification of the social world, this child gets communicated by its parents, is the mediatized one. Yeah? When we think about the world, the planet, the earth, as this blue thing, it's an image none of us had ever seen. It is there through media. And exactly this is the point what Berg and Luttmann did not think at all. Schütz, at least in the 30s, has a bit of feeling about that. And our argument is, if we want to build up a theory of the construction or the mediated construction of social reality, which works nowadays, we really have to rethink this fundamental approach of social phenomenology at this point. By the way, we are not the only one. So also others within social phenomenology share this criticism. And then to the implicit link. So there was an implicit link between both parts also theoretically, which we not really, maybe here not worked out. And this has something to do with social domains. So we can follow up the thinking of Schütz, Berger, Luckmann and others until the argument to say, well, the social world, this is structured through various interrelated social domains. But then the question of, well, and how are they constructed? And there they remain quite empty in their arguments. And then we really end by Elias, because Elias has an answer on that. And he says, yes, in figurations. And we must think this from the beginning and onwards in figurations. So this is the theoretical link. And when it comes to media, for us, figuration is not a term we put against media. This is already what we said with relation to mediation. No. The core point of figurations we live in nowadays is that most of the figuration have something to do with media when we understand by media the technical means we use for communication. Think about all the figurations you live in. Can you think them without thinking about media? You cannot do it. And exactly because of that, we have this criticism again with Berger and Luckmann, who again and again in his book, in their book, try to play this game with us. Think about a world which is just face to face. And this is, for us, it is not an appropriate starting point for building up a social theory. Only one sentence about Luhmann. I have to.
Only one sentence.
Only one. Is the tape still going? I do not love him. And all over my career, and it is he is quite famous in German media and communication studies, I have to say. And all of my career, I'm well known for criticizing him. And I think he, also when it comes to communication, he falls short compared to Elias, because he has the idea that communication as such would communicate. And within this processes of communication, systems would build up. And he has not this idea Elias have of interrelating the social and the individual to explain the social. So his argument is more or less based on understanding the social as something independent. And only if you do this argumentative step, his theory works. Otherwise, well, you can go the way a colleague in sociology, with whom I really closely work together, does, who then again tries to bring action theory again back in functionalism, as Luhmann has it, but it isn't there in his original theory at all, from my point of view.
Yeah. Can I ask a really dumb question? Actually, when you were speaking then about people not growing up with majority face-to-face interaction, I was just thinking of the millions and millions of people who do grow up with the bulk of their interaction face-to-face and very limited technological intervention. Indeed, media mediated to an extent, but in a much, much more limited fashion. And I'm wondering then, you were also talking about space and place, but rather you weren't. You mentioned space and place quite a lot in a quite different way. And you also mentioned temporality and time. So I'm just sort of wondering if part of what you're saying is that, in a way, figuration is a precursor to, you know, I mean, I want to link that to your question about how people don't necessarily know how they're enmeshed in certain kinds of infrastructures, and whether you see this mode of analysis in some ways then turning again into a transcending space and time kind of mode of analysis. So that's the kind of very
it is a very important point because obviously on the one hand there are certain big things going on affecting at least most of us in this room, this bizarre subset of people in this room with certain devices and so on and so forth, having certain privileged access to systems which are pressing and we're addressing, and a lot of people, and that can't be ignored, that's not numbered. On the other hand, that is only as it looks from a certain point on the planet, and it, access is very unevenly distributed. So in the chapter, we recognise that, that's fundamental. So in the chapter on communications in history, where we deal with modernity, we won't be having a sort of old notion of modernity somehow magically arising in the West and then being, but there will be competing modernities, not all of which are based in this way, and we will limit the argument, if you like, the rhetoric of the book to the way it feels from a certain point of view. But I think with the caveat that these are systems to generate value through the social are being aimed at the whole thing. For sure. A corporate ambition doesn't know any borders. It is trying to sell cheap mobile phones right across Africa and so on and so forth. So it's not as if it's potentially irrelevant. It just doesn't intersect, but that only reinforces the point. It does not intersect with the social reality. So turning it back, and the way I would put the critique in terms of our argument, this, the attempt to, we can only resist and take on board the corporate attempt to appropriate the social if we realise that it is an attempt to appropriate it from the outside. It is not the social that we experience on Facebook. It is the traces of an appropriate attempt to appropriate something called the social for the attempt, for the precise reason of getting us to believe that it's the social. So I completely take that. But one can't ignore the force of the attempt to appropriate. And that someone's got to sort of think it both ways. So you're absolutely right.
I think that's my question. You see great potential, actually.
Yes, no, but that's what we're trying. Exactly, and therefore we have to imagine a space beyond this, which partly, by thinking of other modernities, is a one way of doing it. So a global comparative agenda, therefore, has to be part of that.
Interesting examples, the whole discussion now on internet.org. Internet.org, so an initiative by Facebook to give free internet to some parts of the world.
Yes.
Free.
But it's a limited internet.
Carolina Botero calls it gringo internet. Yeah, it's only their services and some specific ones, but that's a whole
discussion.
Just as an add-on, so our argument is not that it must be the internet like we know it. But also, even if you go, and you can also refer to the criticism we got by Don Slater in his book 2 years ago. And also, he taking his criticism serious, yes, we have to avoid a Western perspective. Yeah, right. But the point, nevertheless, is also what he describes using, he calls it communicative assemblage. And also what he describes for other regions of the world is exactly the problematic we have in mind. And this is that technical device, however you call it, become intertwined with the interrelations of human beings. So, well, you can say we need for each region of the world a different term. Okay. Another way to say is, well, maybe this term figuration is helpful, but we must be very sensitive how we use this term in various contexts. So this might be an answer on that.
Yeah, it's interesting because Don is heavily uses it as a heavy Latour.
What does he do then? He uses his idea of the communicative assemblage and again extends it globally. So rhetorically, it's the same move.
Yeah. But I think I've read Don's book quite closely admire it very much. But the problem with the book is that he doesn't want to recognize the force of things we call media, institutions with the ability to brand reality as reality, which is what we are now dealing with even more forcibly than we could have imagined 10 years ago. And you have to have a certain view of power to do that, and that's why Latouria and Flatwoods and Social simply can't get to that, although he tries to bolt it on in the reassembling the social by talking about panoramas and social, but it's a very weak bolt on and it falls off pretty quickly when you start using it. So these are really crucial questions.
Yeah. Nice argument.
Perhaps a last comment.
Sure.
I think Latour in We've Never Been Modern, when I read that, about like how the moderns are superior, and then there come, you know, the gringos with internet.org, places where people don't necessarily have access to tell them this is the way it should be. When I read that, for me it was like, oh, this is the way power relationships actually work. Like, how do you legitimize that someone is superior or modern or more modern or inferior than other people? So I think in not all of his work he has like this flatness, but there might be other work that addresses this problematic.
Yeah, no, I quite agree. And I'm a great fan of Latour, except in his grandiose reassembling of the social phase, where he tried to develop a total theory of sociology. But I mean, also in that book, he talks about nets thrown over territory and points out, in a way that Castells never does, that the net is a linkage with holes. And there's grass growing up through the holes or something. And so networks cannot be all of the social. This is a beautiful paragraph he lays that out. I wish that's the response to Castells, the notion of network theory. So I think, of course, absolutely.
It's fascinating to see Elias being used like this, because certainly in the UK, he's still never really become the establishment figure that one would imagine he deserves. You know, he's always remained a little bit of... I don't know if this is true in Germany.
It's the same in Germany.
Yeah. I don't know why. It's really, you know, refreshing to see you using him so much, I think, in such a creative way, and a part of his work that tends to get underplayed, because everybody does think civilizing process. Maybe one or two of the other books, but not the stuff you're talking about.
But Foucault, who, of course, had overwhelming influence, was influenced.
Yes, but the Foucauldians
never. Latour. The interesting thing is he was stimulated a lot of rethinkings. If you look carefully, Latour and others. But he himself never reached that position. And it is interesting, really, to remember him and read his original arguments. Mm-hmm. Because, from our point of view, if you compare it to Latour. Latour is also interesting, and I think what Latour made was he brought his argument in that technology is society made durable. I think this is really his add-on, in a nutshell. But he has not that close link to social theory anymore, like, for example, Elias have. And I think Elias is interesting because this intermediary role. So he was marginal in the UK, he never made a real career, but he was one of the figures, like, for example, Mannheim, who really had this contact to the original beginnings of sociology across Europe. And he was a real European thinker at that point, and this makes him interesting and also sensitive. If you read his the works he has written when he was really already very old, he was sensitive, very sensitive on what's going on. And this was the time when Parsons was the big figure. And he became nervous, really nervous. Rereading him, you feel it, how he became nervous. Everybody is talking about or arguing the Parsons sense and not realizing what's going on in the 70s.
Absolutely.
And this makes him interesting also from a today's perspective.
There are some very strong people like Stephen Mannell in Dublin. I think he's worth looking at. It's a very strong Elias network. Whenever we get an Elias paper at the BJS, it's very clear who to send it to, and then they're always reviewing, and they're very keen. So it's worth seeking him out to get some views on it.
And I've been getting into that network with this good way of getting it read and tested, as it were. Mm. Anyway, fantastic beginning to the seminar. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. And good luck with the book.
Thank you very
keep
much.
That cover. And I think people are going to drink now with Nick.
Yeah.
I'm afraid I've got to go to Leicester Square. Apologies.
I knew about the time
it was a very intense sort of working on a book thing. So it was fascinating. It's going to be an OUP book next year, so basically it was really solely to work on the chapters for that. So we only had about speed.
I'm going to go to the next one.